Okay. Come to order, please. I do not believe we have any introductions that need to be made. And so, Reese, if you would have the invocation, please.
You stand?
Yeah.
Now stand, please, for the invocation. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this opportunity to meet and conduct the people's business. Ask that you give us wisdom and guide us in all our decisions, Lord. And we thank you for this this day that you've given us today. And in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. And the pledge.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and Laban is going to read the mission statement.
Our mission is to improve learning and increase learning opportunities in South Carolina through the creation of innovative, high-quality charter schools. Ultimately, we strive to assist South Carolina in achieving academic excellence.
Madam Secretary, if you'll call the roll.
Ms. Bagley?
Here.
Ms. Boyd?
Here.
Ms. Bull?
Here.
Ms. Chappell?
Here.
I see Dr. Evans is not with us yet, unless he's expected.
He said he was coming, didn't he? Yeah.
Okay.
He's.
Mr. McLaurin?
I'm here.
Mr. Payne?
Here.
And Ms. Dale?
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Okay,
thank you.
First item would be the consent agenda. I hear a motion regarding it. Can't move on without a motion.
For adoption.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay. And public comments. Mary Carmichael, I believe, wanted to speak.
Yep. Good morning. Mary Carmichael, I'm the Executive Director of the Public Charter School Alliance of South Carolina, and I just wanted to give you a brief update on what's going on over at the State House, and it's been a joy the first month or so of the legislative session. Have some good partnerships going on between the Alliance and the district, and I think we're going to get a lot of great things done this year for the students that are enrolled in your schools. Ellie's been really active in getting back feedback to us from both some of the board members and staff and your legal counsel on some pieces to really improve the process. We appreciate that. The one piece that I know you requested at your last board meeting was trying to get into proviso or maybe into the Charter Act, an extension of some time to review applications and to have that hearing. And so both in a bill that we're drafting that will hopefully be filed in the House upon their return, they're taking next week off. But that next week, hopefully we'll file that. And then in proviso, there's also very language that pretty much mirrors what we have in the bill that would give you an additional 60 days to hold a hearing for schools that you kind of recognize that there's the ability to really close the achievement gap in an area of the state that's underserved and has kids that are really deserving of the charter school in that area, but the application maybe needs a little bit of work. And the staff, we've had a good meeting to kind of work through what that could look like. And then the other issues that we're seeing, we know that the biggest gaps in funding right now for your students and really for charter school students across the state, whether they're locally sponsored or with you, around facilities, technology, and transportation. On the facilities piece, Representative Erickson introduced a proviso the other day for a $300 increase, or not an increase, but $300 per pupil facilities fund. We're cautiously optimistic that I think the House will at least take that up. They're working on the budget next week to try to figure out where those pieces can fit in, and then Rita Allison and Representative Sterner both worked on the infrastructure bank language, and they met with Kenny Bingham yesterday to try to figure out how to put charter school language in there as well. We're excited about that. And then the last thing is the Abbeville cases and the plaintiff districts. You've heard a lot about that over the last year or so. I think last November 2014, they finally made a decision on that case after 23 years in the court system. In that time, we created a charter school law, had charter schools flourish across the state, and then created the statewide district. You've got 2,800 kids that are enrolled in your schools in the statewide district that actually live in this plaintiff district. And we're trying to insert language that would actually allow your students to actually gain access to some of the benefits. There's about $33 million budgeted for technology, upfitting, and infrastructure for specifically for online testing. So we've been talking this week with the State Department and the School Board Association and others about what that could possibly look like, whether it's them actually building test centers and building that infrastructure in existing buildings, and our students could just go there to take their testing is one solution that we're looking at. So we'd certainly appreciate this board understanding what we're trying to do and have your support to make sure that it's really about the students and not about the districts. A lot of the bills that have been filed so far talk about getting resources to the districts and really about preserving the system that's there, and a system that we kind of feel is broken maybe. So if we can keep that focus on the students, that would be appreciated.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Did I understand correctly what you said? Which part?
Y'all excuse us just a minute.
I thought you said extended for 60 days, but that would include hearing things now. Have I got that messed up?
I don't think she talked about that.
Okay. Okay. We do not need, unless someone else knows, I don't know of a need for an executive session. Okay, our action items. The first thing is the transfer hearing for Felton Lab School, and this will not be treated the same way as a new application hearing. We're not going to do 30 minutes. I mean, the staff will have a report for us. There's a lot more known about than this in the group thinking about starting the school. As you know, it's transferring in, and so what we've told them is. Elliot, I think you told him 10 minutes for a presentation.
Yes,
yeah, 10, between 10 and 15 minutes. And then we'll have time for some questions and deliberation. So are y'all ready? Who's going to be the presenter?
A little bit closer.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. If you would. Of course, introduce yourself and anybody else you have here with you, and we'll get going.
If you don't mind, I can't stand behind
the book. Oh, no, that's no problem at all.
Good morning. My name is Gloria Winkler, and I'm the director at Felton Laboratory Charter School on the campus of South Carolina State University. And we are going to be very, very brief with you this morning. We're going to tell you all the things you need to know, but we're afraid to ask, that it may not be in your report. I have with me this morning, first of all, Mr. Michael Coxham, who is our business manager, Mrs. Anna Hauser-Jacobs, who is our grants coordinator, Mrs. Patricia Goldsmith, who is our assistant director, Mrs. Natalie Gamble, who is our special services coordinator, Mr. Alexander Trisecki, who is our board chair, Dr. Jennifer Cash, who is our board's vice chair, and Dr. Albert Hayward, who serves as our superintendent since the university was our sponsor. He is the dean of the schools of social sciences, humanities, and the fine arts. I always forget that. At any rate, we are a year-round school. We serve grades kindergarten through eighth grade. Anything else you may need to know about us, the other presenters will give you. So thank you very much for your hearing us this morning.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
As Dr. Winkler just indicated, my name is Anna Jacobs, and I serve as an education consultant and grants writer for the school. I'm going to give you a brief history of Felton Laboratory School, and my presentation will be followed by Ms. Goldsmith, who will give you some more details about the curricular programs offered at the school. But initially, Felton has existed on the campus of South Carolina State University for over 96 years. The school began in 1920 as a kindergarten program and as a part of the teacher education program at the university. The program also served as a training ground for prospective teachers so that they could get some hands-on experiences in dealing with young children and get a head start on what to expect when they would go out into the classroom and become active teachers.
1924, a grant from the Rosenwald Foundation allowed a four-room building to be constructed for this particular school. Now, the Rosenwald Foundation was created by Julius Rosenwald, who was a Chicago philanthropist who had a special affinity for social issues. And one of his great passion was the plight of African-American students in the rural South who were not being afforded the opportunity to have a formal education. So he created this foundation and offered grant monies for various schools to be constructed in the rural South that would educate black students. The program, by 1928, that program had actually created a situation where one in every five schools for black students was a Rosenwald school. And many of you have probably heard of the Rosenwald Foundation. But by the time the program ended in 1932, over 4,900 schools had been created, and Felton was one of those schools. But over the next 50 years, the building and the program went through several renovations, which includes the campus that we're actually housed in now. And the curricular expansion allowed the program, the school, to expand its grade level to from kindergarten to eighth grade students. So we're actually a K-8 campus now. So when the university a few years ago was considering whether or not they could continue this school and continue to support it, they began to try to figure out, you know, how could we preserve the legacy of this historical landmark? And so the current president at the time, along with a group of concerned citizens, decided to explore the option of converting the school into a public charter. And that's how we began to exist as a public charter school. They figured that doing this would allow them to continue three things. Number one, preserve the historical legacy of the school. Number two, continue to provide a valuable service to the community of Orangeburg so that we could continue to educate future generations of students and prepare them for the 21st century, as well as provide another option for parents to send their children to school. And finally, we wanted to continue the practice of providing a training ground for teacher education candidates at two of the local HBCUs in the community. So thank you for hearing me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm simply going to tell you today about a typical day of a student at Felton Laboratory Charter School. And I'm going to speak on a fifth grade student, which is our middle of the road between K and A. When students come in the morning, the parents drop them off. They're greeted by myself and Dr. Winkler. We help get the kids out of the car. They go inside to breakfast, those who choose to eat. And we encourage them to eat because a child who is hungry can't think and can't focus the rest of the day. So they go into breakfast, and then the teachers come to the cafeteria. They pick them up. They move them down to the classrooms. The students get prepared. They put their things in their lockers, and they go into the classes, and they get started. Right now, our fifth grade group, along with our arts program, is studying the Harlem Renaissance period, which focuses our curriculum. Our curriculum is standards-based, South Carolina standards-based. So we hone in, first of all, to those standards and then we expand. So our fifth graders, if you came in, for instance, this week, they would be working in the history class, comparing and contrasting the post-war area and the Renaissance era. And so this also is preparing them for our state testing, which is coming up, where they have to, this year, be very focused on finding, being able to support their answers as opposed to just multiple choice and expanding. You'll see the kids in math doing different graphs, which will cover the math component. For the science component, they would be doing some different things, studying the scientists and what was going on during that time, which also moves into the history and the English.
We try to have our students to write each day, because the more they write, the better they become, and in all of the areas. You will see them in ELA working on the poetry, which is going to be analyzing, and they're going to be breaking down the poetry. They're going to be finding the answers within the text and being able to deliver that in their writing, which is what we want them to do. And at some point during the day, middle of the day, they have lunch, and then we give them time for recess so that they can get all that energy out. If you know fifth grade or that middle school, they have a lot of energy. So we try to give them time to get that out, and then in the afternoon, they go to their related arts. Today is Thursday, so our students will be going to dance. And in the dance class, they're preparing for the culminating activity, which is going to be a concert that they produce in March, putting everything together from the Harlem Renaissance. So we try to make everything connected and relevant to our students and show them the real life connections so that they can go forth and be successful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
I'm
just going to like to give you a couple of brief snippets regarding our financial stability for Felton Laboratory Charter School. Just a couple of notes. It's important for you to know that presently our student enrollment has increased from 129 students as of last year as a special school of the state to presently, as our 45th day, our present enrollment is 356 students.
Did you say 200 or 300?
356. It's also key to note that as of July 1, our power schools is now hosted by Pearson. So why would you want to know about that as it pertains to financial stability? Well, as you all know, power schools is our mechanism to input data which turns into how we are funded. Prior to July 1, Power Schools was hosted by the university, and as a result, sometimes we didn't receive all the funding that was due to us. As of our 45th day report, we are currently operating with revenues, annual revenue of roughly about $2.9 million for this year. It's also a good note or information for you to know that our facility cost is basically one fourth of what we budgeted for this year. By the end of June, we will have at least 1 month's operating revenue. We thank you again for hearing us. I know that you all have additional questions. We will try to facilitate those as best as we can.
Thank you. One of the items that I wanted to address as well is our professional development with our teachers. This year when our teachers came in, we had the Buck Institute come in and to provide training for project-based learning. Because we want to focus our students on analyzing and thinking, and not just learning the answer to the test. We want them to be analytical thinkers. Project-based learning goes into inquiry-based, which is in connection with the STEAM concept. And so while they are two large areas, we take the best parts from each one and make it work for our students. So our teachers had a 3-day training, and in that training, they developed different projects. We started off small, because it is a training, and this was their first introduction to it, where the trainer guided them through different projects that they could do that they could start in the fall with our students. So we started small, and each year we're going to expand. We also have, they'll be coming back in the spring to do the second part of the training for our teachers as a follow-up to how things went, what worked, what didn't work, any questions they may have. We want our kids based in the inquiry
based thinking because we're trying to prepare our students for a college-ready culture, and our colleges and universities are very adamant of what our kids need when they get there. And we want our students to be ready when they enter that environment and not feel less than or lost when they get there. So we're trying to get our students to think more and not just give them the answers, but allow them to come up with the question and research it, and so that they can discover the answers. And in that process, hopefully, we will have students who will develop something new that you see on the news for something great that's coming out of Felton Laboratory Charter School. Thank you.
Is that the end of your presentation, Dr. Winkler? Okay, great. Then we'll move into questions. Do you want to give your recommendation first, or do you want to? We have a staff recommendation. Would you all like to hear that before we go into questions? I think it'd be appropriate.
Yeah, Campbell, answers the question.
Yeah, I think it will.
Dana, do you want to hit some highlights, and then I'll just kind of back clean up on that?
You have a report that the staff developed. We did do a site visit, and as already the chair has indicated to you, the application, we view this, the staff approach this differently, obviously, as a transfer, because the application itself had already been vetted and authorized by another authorizer sanctioned by the State Department of Ed. So we're looking at it from a capacity performance standpoint. This is a really unique school in that it has a very lengthy history as things other than a charter school, and yet it does have 5 months into the charter school experience. And we found capacity, viability, and sustainability, a very dedicated and zealous staff, instructional rigor when we attended the school with the superintendent and some other members of the authorization team. We did observe high student engagement and very purposeful instruction. There was a solid facilities situation, solid budget. The numbers are really good. They've nearly tripled, as you've heard, in their enrollment since opening as a charter school. Highly qualified staff, solid, very savvy business manager. We've enjoyed working with him and calling on his information over the last several months. A solid and diverse board, solid relationships with the university that houses the school, but also in the community, and a strong partner with another charter school in the local area. And so we did conclude that the school has demonstrated, really in sum, more capacity and than many of the startups that we had in our organization. And we do find that if those amendments that are outlined at the end of your report are made, that this is a school that has strong capacity and likelihood to succeed with our and flourish with our sponsorship.
Yeah, I would just add a few things. One, their dance team brought the house down at the Choice rally. Just like blown away by those girls.
Cheerleaders.
And the cheerleaders were amazing. I was very proud just watching them up there in front of a huge audience. But on a serious note, you know, I look at a few things. I look at the people behind an effort, and I think you see really strong leadership at the school level, but also on the board. That's really behind this school. I look at the data, and I think when you look at the data, you see, you know, areas where this school, I think, clearly needs to get better and needs to grow, especially in the categories of comparing, if you control for poverty in schools like theirs, there's some subjects where, you know, schools like theirs outpace them, and that's pretty clear. But there are also signs of real encouragement. I think when you look at you know, Orangeburg as a district, this school far outpaces Orangeburg as a district in every tested subject on ACT Aspire. 3 out of 4 of those subjects by double digits, some 20 plus in proficiency. If you unpack that further and you look at neighborhood schools in that district, this is the highest performing school. It outpaces all of those neighborhood schools without exception. The other thing that I look at is, you know, I just know we all bring our personal backgrounds to this. I know that in our state and in Charleston especially, race kind of trumps poverty in many schools as a predictor of performance. We just as a state have not figured out a way to sufficiently educate all students, regardless of their background. And so when I look at a school that is, you know, our last numbers we had, 94% African-American, you know, one thing that I wanted to find out is, well, if I compare their proficiency to African-American students statewide, regardless of poverty, those who are on free and reduced lunch and those who aren't, how do they fare? And when I looked at those numbers, their proficiency rates far outpass state averages for African-American students in most subjects, some by 20 and 30 points, which is really, really significant to me. And then the final thing is, you know, I'm just a big believer in what's happening on the ground and observation, and went into this school wholly agnostic, objective. I didn't really know much about them and visited the school, and just saw a lot of great things happening. Saw a lot of energy. I saw rigor in the classroom. I saw, you know, a quality of instruction that's very, very high, a level of student engagement, multiple age groups, a lot of creativity in the classroom, and just walked away really impressed. And with Dr. Winkler, you know, sat with her afterwards, and where I didn't see that, I spoke to her about it very directly, and instead of excuse-making and alibying that, she was very direct about, you know, we are focused on those same classrooms that you saw where you didn't see it happening at a level that we see it in our others, and I've got a plan for that and doing something about it. So I like to see that level of awareness and responsiveness on the part of school leaders, and I saw that there. So I think just a lot of promise around the data, certainly challenges in areas in which the school needs to get better, but the capacity of the people, the encouraging signs around the data, and just their forward momentum and demand in the community for this school has me feeling optimistic about their future in partnership with us, especially if, you know, we feel like we actually have an impact on schools. Can we actually make schools better as an authorizer? And I asked that actually of the staff. Do we make schools better? Do we have an impact through the goals we set, the aspirations we set, our progress monitoring, our conversations, and our supports? I believe that has to be yes, or we shouldn't be in business. And so I would also say, you know, by them coming in, I feel like we can strengthen their work. I think we can work together and identify the areas of growth and make some modifications and help them actually take their game to the next level, so to speak. So that's my perspective on it.
Okay. So
thanks, Danny.
Yeah, so I will open it up now to questions. I would ask, based on conversations we've had the last couple of meetings about trying to be a little more efficient, and also remembering that we've got a full day ahead of us, that you would be brief in asking your questions. And what I'm going to do is go around the table first, and just each person ask one question, and then we'll see where we are at the end of that. So, Laban?
One question I have, and it probably isn't much of a question because I know you've been around there for a while, or Felton has. I understand that the lease expires at the end of June, but there's already discussions. It's probably a non-issue. I'm in the business of that, and so when the lease is not signed, you know, we had an issue with one that we did in Lexington, and that the people backed out on them. This is obviously a lot more history to it. So, is there any issue with? I know we mentioned that there's going to be an additional facility cost, but you've already budgeted for it. Do you foresee any potential issue with just getting that lease solid that will give you a good long-term space?
No, we do not presently foresee any problems with our present situation with the lease signing or continuing our lease agreement in future years. We are looking at other options as well should a need arise for that, but we are pretty solid in our agreement with our current facility.
Okay.
Good.
Reese?
How many students in your current enrollment come to you from outside of Orangeburg County? I was just curious about the recommendation to expand the enrollment area.
I'm going to answer that. Never have really heard how many of you know where they all come from. Mm. But for a total number from each area, I can tell you, we have students that come from Bamberg County. Off the top of my head, I can think of at least three from Bamberg County. Maybe six from Calhoun County, the rest from Orangeburg County.
The relatively small ones?
Yes.
Okay. That's it.
Betty?
No questions.
Betty?
No
There's an imposter.
We're Betty.
Right.
Let the transcript show.
That's right. That's right. Madam Secretary, you making a note of that?
I am.
Okay. Lindsay.
It's on the record.
No, I have no questions either.
Okay. Ron?
What is the financial comparison of your current per pupil reimbursement as opposed to coming into the district? I'm assuming that will be the same.
It's the state. It's a SC state as sponsor.
That's the only question.
No questions, Mr. Chairman, but I was delighted to see the young students in uniforms. I don't recall seeing any pictures on the website of youngsters in uniforms, and that just always brightens my heart. Thank you.
Who's next? Oh, John?
I want to make sure I understood. You said currently your funding is $2.9 million, roughly?
That's what our present revenue projection is after our fourth day report.
Okay, and you've got 356 students, so you're averaging about $8,100 per student?
Our base funding, you know, student allocation, the EFA,
those grants are included in that?
Yeah, we have grants and other subsidies coming.
Okay, because I thought that funding was a bit high.
Yes.
The weighted per pupil allocation is also figured into
that. Okay. All right. Okay.
Ann?
I've noticed you have 22 faculty members and 356 students. That's roughly 16 students per teacher. Is that about right? That's a lot lower than
the teacher-student ratio.
Our related arts teachers as well.
Okay.
But we keep our class sizes 23-24 per class.
Right.
Based on research.
Okay.
We try to gear our funding, not our funding, but our school toward research-related ideas. And typically in Orangeburg 5, the class sizes are 35.
Wow.
When parents see that, they come to us and go, I'm sorry, I only have 324. I can't take anymore. Mm. You know, so it's horrible, but that's how it is.
Wow.
I've got one, and if the board will allow me, maybe two. But have y'all got plans to grow to a bigger student population?
Our idea for our school is probably not to exceed no more than 450 total population.
Well, that's 100 more than you've got, right? I mean, about.
Yeah, about. And the reason for that is, as Dr. Lindo said, we want to try to maintain that small family environment where the teacher to student ratio is very low. Now, should we see that there is a further need for our growth is our growth rate is greater than our facility, then we are also exploring other options to, our vision is to open up other Felton Laboratory charter schools in other counties. That's our long range plan, you know, for our school, but also still maintaining that small family environment.
Okay, a follow up to that then. I think I'm right that your student population is about 94% African American.
Yes.
Okay. Are you making any efforts, or do you have plans to make efforts to increase the diversity there?
Yes, we're doing that. We have a marketing plan at the moment. Yes.
Good, because my suspicion. Wasn't there a time in your history when the student body was more diverse?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was.
I think it'd be.
At that time, most of the students came from the parents who worked on.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. Any follow-up questions? Okay, then we'll, John?
Can we follow up now?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Getting back to my question about your funding, if you've got 356 students and let's say an average is $5,500 a student base, you're looking at, you know, anywhere from $1.8 to $2 million a base. So there's another, let's call it $1 million in grants and whatever funding that you're getting. How firm are you in getting that in the future? Because that's a third of your budget.
Well,
most of that is entitled.
John, he's trying to, there's weighted pupil units in those numbers too, so.
I understand that, but let's call it $5,500 a student, mm-hmm. weighted base. You're looking at, let's call it $2 million, just round it up a little bit. So you've got $900,000 in grants and other funds. That's not revenue. Those are grants, and those are contingent upon you getting them in the future. How confident are you that you'll be able to continue to get those grants without cutting a third of your budget?
Well, I mean, at this point, we are actually for our first 3 years, we are very confident that we'll still be able to maintain our budget. And what we're anticipating is the increased enrollment to try to hedge off any shortfall. Although from my understanding, most schools will tend to actively seek outside revenue to support their schools to, I guess, hedge against our operating budget to kind of spread things out. But according to our projections that we're presently looking at, our goal is to get up to roughly 408 students, which will increase our base
okay.
costs.
I understand.
To kind of mitigate that.
Okay, but I'm looking at handout here. There's roughly $1 million that over a 4-year cycle that could potentially go away. That's my only concern. I'm not saying it's going to go away. It's just my concern. So raising your number of students would help solidify your base.
You know, as well as going after fundraising initiatives, all these things I'd like. And please understand, we are very conservative in our approach. We have our eyes hedged on the very same thing that you're looking at. And, it's hard for me to say. On our plate to make sure that if we have some
just trying to figure out how much to speak.
Should grant information not come in, we can make some adjustments and see the operation.
All right.
And John, if I could, I'm not sure if the million you're referring to includes the federal revenue. They would get that. They also are not currently getting Title I because the university didn't qualify for that as a district. Okay. But coming over to our district, they would.
So there is significant other funding sources that would help.
Yes.
And one other. I understand you're new, so you don't have your audit done yet. Do you have financial statements? Do you have a fund balance?
Presently, at to date, we are right at break even. We do not. A large part of that. It's because we're only 5 months old in the charter school system. A large part of that was contributed to waiting on our 45-day funding,
right.
Which is why we anticipate at the end of the year we should have a significant fund balance.
What's your budgeted fund balance at the end of your first year?
He said that earlier.
Yeah.
1 month.
$250,000.
Okay. Thank you.
I've got one brief follow-up. Help me understand the history for a moment, if you would, because the question about the fund balance, you're 5 months into your relationship with this district, with the school.
Mm-hmm. No.
Or 5 months into your, explain, you had the charter with South Carolina State.
Yes.
Okay. And what was the time period of that charter? This is the year
one.
5 months. Okay. And prior to that, what was there any existing infrastructure or?
We were totally supported by South Carolina State University, and all of its finances ran through the university. We were a part of their infrastructure.
So you were under their budget prior
correct.
To that. Okay.
Correct.
Reese, there's a few schools in the state they call special schools.
Yeah.
They didn't really fall into any
category.
Yeah.
Will
Lou Gray, I think, is another one.
I was a little confused by that comment. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is the board ready to vote?
Are we going to discuss among ourselves?
Yeah, well, yeah, I need a motion. That's what I meant. Well, yeah,
make
we need.
A motion to
make a motion that we approve Belton Laboratory Charter School to become a part of the state charter school system.
Second motion.
Okay, it's moved and seconded to approve the application. So, board discussion. Ron?
I want, and this is aimed, I think, to our staff as much as to the school, if this motion passes. I think we need to be very careful in the analysis of data that we've done, because the analysis of data, we're comparing apples with oranges. The school had a special population, a unique population that does not allow us to compare it accurately with even other schools in the county. It's kind of like I had to constantly remind another school board that wanted to compare Richland 1 with comparable districts. There was no comparable district because of a number of features related to Richland 1. There's no comparable district to make this comparison when a lot of the test scores are based on the fact that they had a special select population. You know, I don't want to be a forecast of gloom, but we're going to see different data when we have open Orangeburg admission to the school than what we're seeing now. That will not be an indicator that the school isn't being successful. It'll be an indicator that we changed the population. And so a great deal of emphasis was made on the fact that they outperformed this population or that population. It's not an accurate comparison. And I say that not as it relates to affecting this vote, but I say that to prepare for future presentations when we analyze the data and we see some different things happening. There's a reason those different things are going to happen, and we can't bias ourselves with the expectation that what we've seen is what we're going to see. And that's going to have a dynamic effect unless the school does something that they're not allowed to do under law, and that is continue selective admissions. So I just want to make that point as much to our staff, because even in our printed document, it makes reference to those comparisons. So I think we're setting ourselves up.
Reese?
Don, this may a comment, I'll offer it as a comment, but it might actually need to be an amendment. I think the staff report had some very sound recommendations for a conditional approval, and I would like to see those incorporated into any approval of the district.
Yeah, I was thinking the same. Isn't that what y'all intended?
Yes, there are a few.
Yeah, there are four recommendations.
Recommendations at the conclusion of the staff report, specifically
right.
One expanding the enrollment area.
Well, do you want to propose an amendment?
The chair would like to hear an amendment. I'd offer one. I mean, that's
that would make it cleaner.
For the record, I support Ms. Beatty's motion, but I would like to offer an amendment to the motion that the four recommendations offered on page 8 of the staff report be incorporated into the approval such that it's conditional upon those four items.
Okay.
Second that, Mr.
Chairman. Okay, it's moved to second.
And that's not as recommendations, that's as contingent approval, correct?
That's my interpretation of the recommendation from staff, and that would be my motion.
Right. Okay, moved and second. Any discussion on the amendment to the motion to include the four recommendations from staff as being requirements as part of a contingency of the approval?
Just for clarification, I just want to make sure I understand. Have we had the discussion of not having conditional charters?
We talked about that from time to time. Well, I mean, of having them or not having them.
If I could just qualify, given that this is not an approved
applications.
Right.
So the conditional approval concerns that you shared and discussed are not attaching to this transfer request.
Okay. Okay, any other comments about the amendment? Okay, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, now we're back to discussing the motion as amended. Any other discussion?
The other question I had, I haven't quite finished. The other question I had is, I'm assuming that that it's clear there'll be no preferential admissions for staff at the college.
Yes,
there can't be now.
There has been but there cannot be now. I assume that there are none now.
We follow the law to the letter.
Thank you. So there can't be now, but there has been in the past, and that was a topic of discussion.
So
that
were those students put out?
I can't answer that. Can you ask me a question?
Yeah, could you address that issue, please?
What is the question, please?
Since you had selective enrollment in the past, now that you've moved,
we have never had selective enrollment. We took children as they came. Students decided they didn't, for whatever reason, they wanted to go to other schools. We have Orangeburg Prep. We have.
Okay, I really don't have time, but you're saying you didn't have it. Ron, why don't you ask the question?
At one time, my
reading of your website was that there was selective admission prior to your becoming a charter school. So I'm assuming
admission was basically on the information we required from public schools. Birth certificate, immunization, all of that. Now, it might have implied that, and I've seen that on our website because I've asked the webmaster to remove it before we became a charter school.
So there were no preferential admissions offered to students who performed better academically?
No, ma'am.
I'm not saying students
for members of staff, right?
But it also implied the academic preference as well.
So I think the question is just a yes or no answer, and that's only because of time. Was there preferential treatment given to the children of staff and faculty of the college?
None.
Okay.
None at all.
Yeah. Further discussion? Okay, then I assume we're ready to vote. All in favor of the motion, which is to approve the school, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Congratulations. We look forward to having y'all as part, and you can now start working with the staff to see how all that works out.
Let's get going.
Yeah.
Let's see it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate
y'all. Okay, and board, we really need to get moving. You remember that we were going to have the second reading. On the policy regarding hearing applications outside of the timeline and how that might happen. With the board's indulgence, as Mary mentioned in her. Statement. There's legislation now proposed that would address that issue. And it may, according to what happens to the legislation, it may or may not affect what we'd want to do as a policy. My recommendation, and Elliot and I have talked about this, is, and Eric, we checked with Eric, is that we table that until we see what happens with the legislation, so we don't have to go through it again, or maybe not even go through it. But we can either. I could hear a motion to table, or we could just.
Or we don't take any action.
That's what I was going to say. Just take no action is the easiest thing to do. But I want to make sure the board's comfortable with that, because it's on the agenda, and we had said we were going to talk about it, but this has all happened in the last 2 or 3 days. So is everybody okay with that?
I've got a comment to offer. It would seem to me, if we think there is an area where our policy can be improved, why wouldn't we just do that? Mm-hmm. And irrespective of, because the wind can shift at the State House
right
at any moment. And
right.
So why? I mean, legislation is going to trump our policy, whatever we do or don't do.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just do what we think is right? And if it gets trumped by legislation, it gets trumped by legislation.
We can do that. Yeah, we can do that. Do you have any comments about that?
I think it's. I mean, for me, it's more sort of the legislation kind of informing the synergy between those two.
Yeah.
And from a just timing perspective, risking nothing by picking this up a month from now at the next board meeting. That was really all. It's not going to affect anything.
What we discussed, there's nothing on the horizon, no applications on the horizon that would need to implement this policy on the behalf of.
Okay.
But if y'all want to move forward with it, we can move forward with it. My main consideration here is keeping moving, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay.
Is everybody okay? We have a consensus on that. Okay.
Last thing.
Yeah, new school contract.
Yes,
that's something Elliot
I'm requesting approval from the board. Any contract that exceeds $15,000 requires board approval. This contract is to help us throughout this authorization cycle. To have, you know, a great authorization cycle, and also to evaluate our practice, kind of train us up, help us get better. This is a contract with someone who is kind of a preeminent, you know, authorization expert who worked at Chicago Public Schools more than a dozen years ago at the Kip Foundation in Kip, and then was the COO of 4.0 Schools, which is kind of a new school incubator. She's amazing. And
what's her name?
Her name is Beth Sealing, and this was a very tight scope of work here, and it extends actually over 4 months, where she is not only going to kind of coach and train and be part of evaluation right now, but she's also going to, by evaluating us, essentially audit our practices and give us a recommendation. I'm not just thinking short term, I'm thinking long term. So how can we kind of learn from her about how we can work with the State Department and the Alliance and actually improve the application process for the next round, right? We've gotten feedback from the board and from others around certain components of the process. So she's coming in not just to help us execute over the next 4 months. We've got 15 applications plus one replication app, and to really dig in and be part of that process with our team, but also to help us learn from that in a way that's going to set us up to modify the process and make it a lot better for the next round. That's really a huge part of her work, is to bring those recommendations to us.
So the motion is what?
To approve the contract.
But for how much?
Oh, it's $32,000.
Okay.
For the 4 month contract. And there's a pretty clear scope of work around numbers of actual applications she's going to review, training. She's going to come here, site visits, actually offered up a training with the board on sort of, you know, engaging a board around the application process, and includes all of her recommendations at the end and the work that she's going to put into that.
And do you have a line item from where it will come from the budget?
Yes, it's going to come from the authorization team's budget and money that we have in assessment. So basically assessment and authorization can easily cover the expenditure.
Okay. So now, Kathleen, can the superintendent make a motion?
No, he can recommend.
Right. There is a need for a motion.
Yes.
So, would someone be willing to make a motion so we can discuss it?
Motion to approve the superintendent's request for funding for the proposed contract.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Moved and seconded to approve the recommendation of the superintendent for a contract for someone to evaluate and make recommendations to us concerning our approval process. Discussion. In the amount of $32,000. Discussion.
Did you have to do an RFP for this amount of money?
I didn't do an RFP for it. No.
I I just don't know what our policy is.
I think it falls under a category of service that doesn't require an RFP. Is that right?
Correct.
Eric's nodding his head.
Okay. Good question.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So this young lady whose contract we're considering is different from the young lady who was the prize in the recruiting contest that you talked about.
The Harvard intern?
Yeah,
actually, she called this week and she's coming. That's totally different.
Okay. Well,
that'd
the,
be a
I
staff person
sure.
that would be added next year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And she different. Starts June-ish?
July. Yeah, next fiscal year.
My only question, why wouldn't this just be a consent agenda item?
Well, my interpretation was that our policies say that the board has to approve any contract over $15,000.
But we approve consent agenda, right?
Yeah, we do, but there would be no, if it were just in the consent agenda, I was afraid that somebody wouldn't feel like that it had been adequately aired. You're right. It's fine with me.
We could pull it out. I am just moving forward. Are all contracts going to start coming?
Well, that's what I would have done. But if the board doesn't want to do that, I mean,
I'm unfamiliar with consent agenda. Anyways, this is not my.
I
would need a little bit of
something
that
there's no discussion.
No,
I mean,
discussion.
Yeah.
We're just approving it. And it's,
right. If there's discussion, it comes off the consent agenda.
Right. Okay.
We created a training session.
Right.
Maybe 4 years
ago. Yeah, something like that.
Where we used to, every act we would act on as a board, and we said, when we went through the policy governance training, we said,
right.
that's not appropriate if it's within policy. And it's required by law that the board approve it. It's required by our policy that our board approve it. If it's routine operation of the district, put it in consent. And board members can then pull it out if they have a question,
right.
And we would discuss it.
And I'm fine with that. To be honest with you, because when Elliot talked to me about it, it may be living in Charleston County and seeing what that school district is going through. I'm serious. No, I mean from a financial standpoint,
right.
I just didn't want to be in the position of somebody saying later, "How did that slip through? We're supposed to approve it."
And I'm not taking a position one way or the other.
Right.
I just remember our
right.
previous training.
No, I didn't see this as quite that routine.
I agree. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Remind me again, Elliot, what is the threshold, Don, for
15,000?
15,000. Yeah.
And this would be 32 plus whatever travel and incidental expenses she incurs in 4 months.
That's right. I don't expect her to come here more than a couple times.
Yeah.
So there's not going to be a lot of travel associated with this. Especially now that we have this virtual, video conferencing.
Yeah.
We have had a superintendent in the past who's just broken it up into three contracts.
I didn't want to do. I wanted to bring the full contract.
Yeah,
I could have done that.
Contract.
Yeah.
Am I not right, Kathleen?
I could have just. Done
I was
a
also thinking about
$15,000, but
yeah.
I figured I'd just bring it to you. I think it's going to be great to me for us to be an extraordinary district. It starts with authorization. It starts with our process for bringing in new schools. And this investment is going to pay off in a big way to help us get better at that.
Tell me a little, does she have a consulting firm? What's her?
Yeah, she's an independent consultant now.
If this is curiosity lesson, we've got a full day.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah. I think we're ready. We can talk to him offline.
Lunchtime.
Yeah.
Happy to talk
to him. Okay.
I've got one question. You mentioned she may have to come down here a few times. In section 4 under compensation, I don't see anything about travel. Is that on her dime?
No, we
cover her travel.
Well?
Yeah, it's in there.
At GSA,
it's in there somewhere.
It's under expenses.
It's under that.
Expenses.
Is a reimbursement for travel.
Transportation, lodging,
is
and
there
meals.
A cap? Where is it?
GSA rates.
Well, Elliot's going to control
the
travel.
Yeah, Elliot's the cap.
Elliot, she's staying with Elliot's college.
Okay, are we ready to vote?
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay. Now we're going to move into the main order of the day, which is board training on policy governance. And Paul Myers is here. Paul, if you'll come up. A lot of you know Paul. I guess there's three or four of you here who don't. You'll Has everybody met him? Okay. This was actually, while we wanted the time, the first time Paul has gotten to see us in action, actually doing something. But I bet it was instructive. Yeah. Paul has been here. How many times have you been here, Paul? Is this your fourth time here?
Fourth time, yeah.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, I'm sorry. Strategic plan, Paul guided us through that.